Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you and welcome to this edition of Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latwas. Coming up, 1 year after mass violence broke out in South Sudan, battles between government forces and rebels continue.
A big majority, they want peace, but how could peace look like? There was a lot of mobilization and instrumentalization of ethnic groups.
We will also be having a report on Ugandan Ebola survivors who want to go to West Africa to help contain the spread of Ebola.
I'm not a medical personnel, meaning I will not go and do medical issues, but I will go for public health.
All that and more right here at Africa Link.
Top story.
Fighting between South Sudanese government troops supporting President Salva Kiir and forces loyal to his sacked deputy Riek Machar have entered second year today. Rights groups say war in South Sudan is worsening with extreme violence and growing hunger. The conflict has killed more than 10,000 people and peace talks have yielded no results. In a moment, we will be speaking to an analyst, but first, here is Sela Oneko and Abubakar Jallo with a fact box.
South Sudan chose Salva Kiir, a former military leader of the Sudanese People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, and member of the Dinka ethnic group, as its first president. Second in command was Vice President Riek Machar, also a former rebel leader from the Nuer tribe.
Internal struggle has always plagued the South Sudanese rebel movement. Machar had differences with the SPLM under the leadership of John Garang and left in the early 1990s to form his own rebel movement. But in 2002, he settled his dispute with Garang and joined the SPLM rebel movement.
After the SPLM formed the government of South Sudan, another internal struggle within the party finally reached its peak in July 2013. President Kiir dismissed several ministers as well as Vice President Riek Machar. While Machar claimed that he had simply shown interest in the country's presidency in the next election, Kiir later maintained that Machar was planning a coup.
In December 2013, fighting broke out between the two political factions in the capital, Juba. Between 15th and 18th of December, reports surfaced that 200 to 400 people of the Nuer tribe had been killed in the area of Gudele. Attacks and revenge attacks resulted in the killings of civilians in towns, churches, hospitals, and even a refugee camp. International observers noted that the attacks in the towns of Bentiu and Bor were especially brutal.
Over the next couple of months, ceasefires and peace agreements were forged and broken. 1 year after the outbreak of the fighting, 1.5 million South Sudanese have fled their homes. Meanwhile, South Sudan is experiencing one of the worst food crises in the world. According to the UN, around 80,000 children are currently affected by acute malnutrition. Last week, Human Rights Watch called on the UN Security Council to impose sanctions and an arms embargo on both warring factions.
Sela Oneko and Abubakar Jallo with that fact box. Now, as we have heard, the fighting, which has a strong ethnic component, erupted 12 months ago amid allegations of a coup against President Kiir. For a comparison of the situation then and now, I talked to peace and management consultant Martin Petri.
Well, it's a lot of deception. There were so many efforts and so many initiatives and so many roundtables and talks. Everybody always hoped that there will be a ceasefire and then also some sort of agreement for the way forward. And so far this has not been reached. So everybody really is afraid now new hostilities will start again.
Looking at people, what impression do they have and what do they really want?
A big majority, they want peace. But how could peace look like? There was a lot of mobilization and instrumentalization of ethnic groups. Since the leader are Dinka or the other leader is Nuer, those communities have been mobilized for the war. whereas other ethnic groups try to stay away. There's a lot of militias have been built up, and those militias have been armed by either of the groups.
And what do they say could be the solution to this? What is really the sticking point there?
Consensus is that in order to build a peaceful nation and in order to develop our nation, it needs many years. So what we should have at the moment is a ceasefire, which is really held. To stop violence now is really the most important aspect. And based on that, an agreement which would give some sort of orientation for a transitional period, which on the one hand should not be too long, but also not be too short. And then this perspective that reconciliation is a long-term process. And what you see at the moment, many of people talking about reconciliation or this kind of process, you have always the feeling it's to manipulate or instrumentalize people to support one of the warring factions.
It wasn't the first time that you are in Juba or in South Sudan. You have been there for, you know, many times. Yeah. What is the difference between this visit that you have done and your last one?
I've been in South Sudan 3 times this year. So in June, there was still this hope when I was there in September, and also now in November, there a lot of people more or less lost hope that those guys negotiating are really making progress. On the other hand, which also is maybe a bit more optimistic, is that you see there's quite some initiatives from different African countries, like this intra-SPLM dialogue. The very fact that those meetings and things take place can also be interpreted a bit optimistically.
I was speaking to Martin Petri there.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
And now to Uganda. The government there is preparing to send more than 70 health workers to West Africa to help contain the Ebola outbreak. The East African nation, which itself had several outbreaks of the virus, already has 15 of its health experts in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. One interesting thing about this time, though, is that survivors of a previous outbreak in Uganda feel that they too can help in the fight. Alex Jita spoke to some of them, and here is his report.
As Ebola continues to ravage parts of West Africa, Ugandan survivors of the deadly disease have offered to share their experiences and help fight the epidemic. The Ebola hemorrhagic fever killed over 200 people in Uganda in 2000. Walter Odong was one of those who survived.
It was terrible for me. The symptom that I was having, I started vomiting. I started feeling headaches, severe headaches, completely severe headaches.
Odong was treated for a week before it was realized that he had contracted Ebola.
I was admitted at a common word, not malaria. They did not even suspect me to have contracted Ebola. That was very unfortunate anyway.
Odong was then treated by Dr. Matthew Lukuya at Lacho Hospital in Igulu. Lukuya contracted Ebola from one of his patients and died. To honor Lukuya and the medical team that saved thousands of lives in Igulu, Odong and a group of other survivors have asked the World Health Organization and the Ugandan government to allow them to make a contribution to the fight in West Africa.
I'm not a medical personnel, meaning I will not go and do medical issues, but I will go for public health. That includes talking to people, sensitization, general hygiene, public hygiene, and so on. This is what we are going to do in West Africa. But it is not limited. As long as World Health could give us other specifications to do. But I must also say I'm ready to donate blood, since we have also realized that our blood could help in resisting our immunity, antibodies is still strong, could help in developing a new person, immunity, antibodies. So that is what we also think, if the government the WSO give us opportunity, we could go and do it in West Africa effectively.
Margaret Odrupio is another survivor of Ebola. She's a trained nurse working at Lacho Hospital. Like Dr. Matthew Kuya, she also contracted the disease from a patient. She advises people in affected areas to avoid contact with the suspected cases. She too would like to travel and pass on her knowledge.
To help the West Africa to fight this disease is isolating. to take precaution of body conduct. They should know how to differentiate, okay, this one as is a new case and this one's a surviving, eh? They have to isolate. They should not mix them together. They should know how to disinfect areas where patients are and to wear proper protective gears.
Odong and his fellow survivors do not yet know whether their offer will be accepted, but are convinced the lessons learned in Uganda could help bring the death toll down in West Africa. Two Ugandan doctors, Samuel Muhumuza and John Dada, died in Liberia fighting the current outbreak.
Alex Jita reporting from Gulu, Uganda. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has held the International Criminal Court's suspension of its investigations into war crimes in Darfur. He has also accused the ICC of humiliating his country. Bashir is wanted by the ICC over alleged war crimes in the western region, where the government has been trying to crush an insurgency since 2003. On Friday, the ICC's prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, said she was halting investigations. So what does that mean for Sudanese people? Aboubakar Diallo has been speaking to Magdi Gizuli, a Sudanese academic and a research fellow at the Rift Valley Institute.
Well, the first thing I think of great interest is that it means crimes can be committed with impunity. And the international community, because of its political restrictions, can do very little about it if it doesn't want to.
What sort of impact does this have on Darfuris?
Well, I think there will be several voices in Darfur talking about this. Rebel movements, of course, will see this as a big setback and will probably chide the ICC for the step and demand the United Nations Security Council take action in that regard. It's not clear, however, if the Security Council, which has not taken action so far, would be ready in any coming future to do so. I personally don't think so. I don't think there is an internationally acceptable option of pursuing Bashir right now. It is just not on the table. But the people on Darfur are people who have been affected by the conflict, people who have fallen victim to the conflict. It raises a big question about, so if justice can't come from the ICC, where can it come from? I mean, so far, it wasn't possible to achieve justice through the judicial system in Sudan. The alternative of the ICC was based on its complementarity, the notion that it could deliver justice, and now it cannot. So the question is, where would the source of justice come from? And so it will raise questions about what would the politics of justice look like in Darfur, of course, with lessons like the situation in South Africa in mind, the situation in Rwanda post genocide in mind and so on, and of course the situation in Kenya, where the ICC also has failed itself by ending a sort of withdrawing charges against President Kenyatta with the claim that it didn't have enough proof to indict the president, although at the beginning there were very loud claims to the contrary made.
Speaking of the Kenyan case there, as you just mentioned, the ICC dropped all charges against Uhuru Kenyatta, citing insufficient evidence as reasons for the action. Do you think this case against al-Bashir is also doomed to fail?
Well, I'm not sure what doomed to fail means anymore. I mean, apparently now with the prosecutor said to the Security Council, the case has failed already. It's not something that we expect to happen. I mean, you have to remember this case has been on for several years now. President Bashir's mobility, diplomatic mobility, has been limited. But politically, of course, he has gained very much from the ICC indictment. It has beefed up his stature inside Sudan by claiming the anti-colonial position. And today he was also producing anti-colonial rhetoric. So you listen to him, you think you were in the National Liberation Movement of the 60s.
Magda Gizuli speaking.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Good to have you back on Crossroads Generation for today's episode in this, the third season of our series.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future starts today.
Before we start, let's recap on what's happened so far. 19-year-old Dan has a child with his former classmate Mercy, but he left the country after their baby was born 3 years ago. Now he's back in town.
Ah, the work at the building site is really hard. And then there's my ex-girlfriend.
Marcy, right? What about her?
I saw her yesterday, but she wasn't at all happy to see me. Maybe I should go back there once I've saved up some money so I can show her that I'm ready to help out.
Marcy is studying journalism now, along with her friends Trudy and Tina. Tina's told them she has a job on the side, but the other girls don't know what kind of job she meant.
Who do you want me to be? Cindy, Susanna?
I want your real name, not the names you prostitutes use on the streets.
No need to get so cross, baby. I'm Tina, okay?
And she's not the only one with a secret. Almost 4 years ago, Marcy's father sold his newborn daughter to a local politician called Mukaraba. Marcy's friend Trudy knew about it, and she used the information in an interview with Mukaraba. The old family story has also caused a big fight between Marcy and her mother.
Marcy, believe me.
You told me you did whatever you could to stop him taking my sister away. And now, I find out that you and Dad planned the whole thing together.
Marcy, I told you the truth.
Give me my child.
Marcy doesn't want her mother to take care of her daughter Linda anymore. That's why she took her child back with her to the university hostel. Let's join them there as we start this 9th episode called Bad News.
Can you just shut up for 5 minutes, Linda? I have so much studying to do. Linda, you're not a baby anymore. You can talk. Why don't you just tell me what the problem is? What do you want? Just tell me, okay? What is it? Are you in pain? Are you hungry? But you wouldn't eat when I tried to feed you. So what is it? Shut up! Just shut up, please! Okay. I don't know what else to do.
Hello?
Hello, Mom?
Marcy, why are you shouting? Is something wrong?
It's Linda. She won't stop crying. I don't know what to do. I have so much work to do and all my friends and neighbors are busy. I didn't know who else to call. I don't know what to do.
Does she have a fever?
I don't think so. She's not hot, but I really don't know what to do. I haven't even slept. She cried all night. And...
Hey, don't you cry. How's that going to help if both the child and the mother are crying?
Will you shut up, Linda? I'm on the phone.
Marcy, calm down. Don't take it out on your daughter, okay? Listen, if you want me to, I can come over and help you with her.
Oh, Mom, would you? I'm so sorry I shouted at you and took Linda away last time I saw you.
It's okay, Marcy. We can talk about all that later.
Thank you. Thank you, Mom.
I'll try and get on the next bus, okay?
Okay.
I just hope there won't be too much traffic.
All right. I'll see you later. Thanks, Mom. I'm sorry, Linda. Mommy's just so tired. It's okay now. Who's that? It's a restricted number. Hello?
Is this Marcy?
Yes.
Marcy Msoto.
Yes, who is this?
Listen, Marcy Msoto. Stop spreading rumors about the Honorable Mukaraba. Keep your big mouth shut or you will lose your tongue.
Excuse me? Who is this?
You have been warned. Leave Mukaraba alone.
Hello? Hello?
Right. So, who left the cement outside on the balcony? See what you've done? It's all soaking wet. Who's going to pay for it? Tell me. Very well. Since none of you wants to talk, I'll be cutting everybody's wages until it is all paid for. Huh? I'm sorry, what's that? Thought so.
I'm sorry, boss. I'm late.
Is this the time you come to work, Dan? What did I tell you about being late?
Sir, it was raining and...
Forget it. Done. You're fired.
Please, sir. I am sorry. It won't happen again.
Get out of here.
I can't believe this. How am I going to find another job? And how will I ever be able to provide for Mercy and our daughter?
Oh, Mom. I'm so glad you could come. Come in, please.
Mercy, they should do something about these stairs. They are not good for old people.
Well, old people don't live here.
Watch your tongue.
Sorry, Mom. Please, have a seat. I only have one chair.
That's better. So where is my granddaughter?
She's asleep now, over there on the bed.
Finally. I thought she wasn't sleeping.
She didn't sleep all night. It's as if she's mocking me.
I know. It's not easy being a parent. I went through this with all of you.
Mom, tell me the truth, please. Is it true what Dad told me?
Mercy, do you honestly think I would have agreed to sell my own child? It was your father's decision and his alone. Don't you remember that I left your dad and went up country to live with my parents for a while? It was because of what he'd done. I only came back because of you, my children.
I know.
Mercy, what your father did was terrible. But I think he's trying to make it right. He's going to testify against Mukaraba.
Oh, there's something else I need to talk to you about. Mukaraba or one of his men just threatened me over the phone.
What?
Yeah, Mom. A man called me and told me not to spread rumors about Mukaraba anymore.
What? Mercy, you know that it's a sensitive case. We can't talk about it before it goes to court. Why would you go discussing it with people?
I didn't. The only person I told was Trudy. And she wouldn't. Would she?
Come in, Tina.
Can you put the lights on, please? It's so dark in here.
It's not your place to tell me how dark it is in my office. Sit down. I heard you arguing with a client the other day. What happened?
Nothing.
It did not sound like nothing, Tina.
He refused to pay me after. You know what?
But we've talked about this before. They should pay you first before you go anywhere with them.
He sounded genuine and...
Don't be naive, Tina. The people who come to these streets looking for a good time are anything but genuine.
I'm sorry, Mr. M.
You know the rules. We agreed when you first came here that it's best if we don't attract attention to ourselves, didn't we?
Yes, but I didn't attract...
You were shouting, Tina. What do you call that? Doesn't that attract attention? Huh? Doesn't it?
I'm sorry, it won't happen again.
It had better not. This is a very private business, and the boss does not tolerate such behavior.
Yes, sir.
You will pay for the room you used and...
Yeah, but sir, that is not fair. It's my body and my life.
And the 30% commission we agreed for every client.
But please, I have to pay the rent and buy food for my brother and sisters. I have to pay for university.
That will be all. Get out. Out, Tina.
And with that sigh from Tina, we end today's episode of Crossroads Generation. Check out Tina's personal video diary to find out how she deals with what just happened. You'll find it on our webpage dw.de/LBE. There you can also listen to this or to any of the previous episodes again. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.
And before we go, let's have a summary of what we have been covering. 1 year after mass violence broke out in South Sudan, battles between government forces and rebels continue. We have also been hearing about Ugandan Ebola survivors who want to go to West Africa to help contain the spread of Ebola. And that's it for today. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. If you would like to comment on what we have been covering here at Africa Link, you can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany. See you tomorrow. I'm Assumpta Latus. Thanks for listening.